You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates. You're listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join Coach C, the USA Strength and Conditioning Hall of Famer, every Monday night to see in a variety of guests, including former players, former and current coaches, pastors, and others will discuss relevant issues in coaching today's athlete, with the goal of equipping the athlete and those coaching them with the physical, mental, and spiritual armor necessary to live their best life. Here's Coach Connors.
Welcome to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors. Today's show is going to be very special because we have Dr. Rick Perea with us, world champion performance psychologist and mentalist, helper, healer, speaker, and author, has authored the book Decision Point, offers services such as a brain spa and wellness center, athletic services, float therapy, also brain training. And Rick, just great to have you in the house. And we have a mutual friend by the name of Coach Bill Jacobs, who kind of put us together, and I'm very thankful for that, and I'm really looking forward to speaking with you today.
Well, thanks, Coach. It's great to be on your show. Coach Jake is just the everything to me. He coached me in college, and he's the best coach I ever had, and that includes at the NFL level. He just was a great teacher of the game, of footwork and technique, and but he's even a better person, if that's possible. So, yeah.
Yes, sir. What I'd like you to do is maybe just give us a little bit of background of your athletic career first, and then possibly how you developed this interest and passion for mental health.
Yeah.
Maybe a little background there.
Sure. So as an athlete, I was an outside linebacker in football, high school, college. I played at University of Southern Colorado Division II school in Pueblo, Colorado. It's now called CSU Pueblo. And they won the national championship D2 in 14 or 15, and their perennial power. Now, I was signed as an undrafted free agent outside linebacker by the Denver Broncos in 1983. I was a rookie with John Elway, Carl Mecklenburg, and those guys. Mm-hmm. The cool thing about that, Coach, is so John Elway was a rookie then, I was too, and then Gary Kubiak was also a rookie in that class. We were all with the Broncos. Fast forward all the way to 2015, Gary Kubiak's the head coach, John Elway's the general manager, and I'm the team psychologist. And that's the year we win the Super Bowl. So,
wow,
yeah, pretty cool story. I spent 2 years on injury reserve in the NFL and never was active, but I learned a lot, learned that I needed to help a lot of other players. And that's one of the reasons I went to school and got my master's degree and eventually my PhD in psychology, so I could help athletes perhaps not go through some of the things I went through. Because as an athlete, the crazy thing about it, Coach, is I was experiencing anxiety in my first NFL camp, but I didn't even know it was anxiety. I didn't even know that the tightness in my stomach and, you know, the pain in my chest, I didn't know that was anxiety. You know, I'd never been exposed to that. Nobody, you know, I'd never been to a psychologist. So once I learned what, there's two different types of anxiety. There's somatic, soma means body. So somatic anxiety is when you feel it physically.
Right.
Cognitive anxiety is when it impairs your thinking. Your thinking narrows and you don't think as clearly. So once I realized that I was experiencing that, I said to myself, I want to get a PhD and then go back in the NFL and help players like me who maybe could have had a 10-year career but didn't, because I thought I hated football. It wasn't that I hated football. I hated the feeling of anxiety when I was in camp and or at practice. So that's kind of the impetus or the motivation of why I became a psychologist and into work in pro sports. And I also, I want people to know, I work with college athletes and high school athletes as well. In fact, after we won the Super Bowl in February 2016 of the 2015 season with the Broncos, it kind of lets you kind of say, okay, that box is checked. So now I do exactly what I want. And that is oftentimes work with high school teams as well. So, yeah.
Right. So tell me a little bit about your current business and the services you offer.
So my business is here in the Mile High City, Denver, Colorado. It's called Think One, the Behavior Design Specialist. And the reason we call it behavior design is because we can shape our thoughts. And I have a saying that says, shape your thoughts or else your thoughts will shape you. And so most people, when they think about working out physiologically, just I break it up, neck down, neck up. Neck down, you got to go to the gym to get in shape. You got to go to the gym to make improvements. You don't just walk up to the front door and say, okay, pecs, grow. They're not going to grow. You got to get in the bench press. You got to do push-ups. You got to do incline. Same thing with the brain. The brain will not learn new techniques, protocols, and practices unless you train it. So I have different techniques and tools that I teach people to regulate anxiety. And you know what, Coach? It basically comes down to this. And this is going to sound like anatomy class for a minute, but then I'll clean it up.
That's okay.
You basically got the autonomic nervous system. And on the autonomic nervous system, you have two sides, sympathetic and parasympathetic. And when people are on the parasympathetic side, their heart rate is calm, their breathing's calm, very little muscle tension, and they think very clearly. When they're on the sympathetic side, heart rate's up, respiration's up, muscle tension, a lot of muscle tension, they're thinking narrow. So one side is stress, sympathetic. Yeah. One side is calm and performance. That's parasympathetic. So everything, all the techniques that I teach here are aimed at helping people stay on the parasympathetic. The cool thing that we do also, Coach, is we do neurofeedback. So we train people's brains through computer programs. So it's at an electronic level. We can train the brain to be calm in the parasympathetic even before it's a conscious decision to be calm. And that's what neurofeedback is, and we do that here. We also have what's called an alpha stim that stimulates the alpha brainwave. Alpha brainwave regulates anxiety, depression, and insomnia. So we not only do coaching and therapy here from a mental perspective, we also treat the brain electronically, Coach, at the core level where it's getting trained without its permission. And that's what's cool, because there are some stubborn people out there don't want to do talk therapy. They don't want to do coaching, but they got a high amp, you know, engine, and we call that high beta. And if they have high beta, they're going to be one of these people that just react, and they're on that sympathetic side most of the time. But we can actually train it to be in that alpha level,
right?
Where they're calm, cool, and collected. And that's there's nothing like that to give that to a quarterback or a major league pitcher, or heck, mom and dad who are trying to regulate themselves when, you know, their kids are going at it in the house.
Yeah, I think I've been on a sympathetic side most of my life, but now I'm trying to learn some parasympathetic breathing.
There you go. There you go. Yeah.
So let me tell you a little bit about, you know, what I've my little journey here has been. So I started a website called armoredlife.org, and I put together an Armored Life team of pastors who I coached, former athletes who played in the NFL who I coached, and then, you know, just other folks that I thought from a coaching standpoint as well might fit in well. You know, I'm just kind of out there on a mission, not really knowing exactly where I'm going. Then I was asked to do this podcast, and I basically, my response was, if I can talk about Jesus Christ, I'll do the podcast. So, you know, I'm trying to bring people to, you know, some form of spiritual life as well, because I think that's also extremely important in this world. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I've had in my podcast a lot of testimony of athletes. We actually went through Paul and the epistles with one pastor. And I've also had, you know, several pastors on that I coached and so forth. So here's the reason that I did this is that I after I retired, I looked back and I thought about my career, and I thought about maybe the 150 guys that went by the wayside over 30 some years for smoking marijuana. You know, the guys that went downtown and got in trouble in a fight or whatever from alcohol abuse, guys that were having financial problems at home that had to support their family somehow. I had a few people come and see me who were thinking about suicide, of course, over the years. I saw two kids that I coached, of course, went home. Well, one went home and got shot, was murdered in a bar, and the other one was murdered in the parking lot of a mall. And, you know, I just tried to think, you know, is there any way that I could save some of these guys? And I don't really know exactly where I'm going with this, but every week I just somehow think of somebody else to bring on that maybe we can just keep pursuing this objective and do something good in the world. So I guess what I really want to ask you about is some of these specifics. And I want to start with marijuana, because it's so has been so heavily used or abused, or however you want to call it, with collegiate athletes, with a lot of collegiate football players who, you know, seem to not be able to stop, even though they knew they were going to lose their scholarship and go by the wayside, which was a really sad deal. But I guess what I want to ask is there a connection with is there a drug-induced schizophrenia, for instance?
Yeah, there is. You know, marijuana has, there's so much research to support that marijuana is very destructive, and it's destructive in many ways in the brain, both from a physiological, but also a psychological and emotional level too. People become emotionally and psychologically dependent upon it, and therefore it's hard for them to stop. There also is a physiological based part of that addiction too. But yeah, there is a schizophrenia that can be, and schizoid, which is a different type of schizophrenia, but schizoid can be induced by smoking marijuana. And this is it's characteristic of irrational behavior, illusional, delusional, and really not being able to accurately judge distances, people's perceptual values. Like, you know, I can't read people's nonverbals the same that I would typically be able to. So yeah, marijuana is one of the most destructive tools we see in modern day sports. In fact, I was just down visiting my son, who's a freshman at CSU Pueblo, where I played, but it was a different name by then. But and he told me that when he walks through the hall of his dorm, he can smell the smell of weed. And so I later met with the coach. I was meeting him because he's a first year coach. And I said, you know, coach, I said, it's really different than in my day. I said, when we had our dorms, we didn't have to worry about smelling pot or smelling weed when you walk down the hall. And my son's telling me that. And the coach says, well, this is the first I heard of it. So, you know, it's just, I see it in the NFL, even though there's drug testing, I see it in the NFL quite a bit. A lot of people believe it regulates anxiety, but no, I'm from the camp that it really does quite a bit of harm to the brain. And again, emotionally, psychologically, some people can't come out of it and they end up throwing away their careers, not only in sports, but I mean in their occupation and oftentimes in relationships as well.
So with the current research that you've been exposed to, you support the fact that, you know, we should stay away from smoking marijuana as athletes.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Because, you know, what people mistake is they say, oh, well, it takes away my anxiety. Yeah, it takes away your anxiety because you're almost, you know, you're dormant because you're in that parasympathetic, but your autonomic nervous system has been depressed, and it wow. Literally gets depressed the more and more you smoke it. So of course you don't feel anxiety because you're not even coherent. Yeah. You're high. You're in a state that just is not able to read, you know, nonverbal communication. And it's just not a good thing. You know, I'll be honest with you. When I was in college, I had a few teammates that used to smoke weed before practice. And I was like, what are you guys doing? And they're like, oh, man, it helps me chill out. And I was like, huh, okay, well, you know.
Yeah, it's football.
Right. I know, this football. Like, I was like, well, let me come chill you out in Oklahoma drill and see how that feels, you know?
Yeah, there you go.
But I'll never forget, coach, one night I went to a party and we were just going to stop by I went to one party in 4 years of college, and this is the party I'm talking about. I went to this party. It was like 9 o'clock. We were playing the next afternoon at 1 o'clock. And we said, let's just stop by. Well, we saw a few teammates there sitting on a couch smoking a bong. I don't know if you even know what that is. You know what that is, Coach?
Yeah, I went to college with some guys, too, that were indulging.
So they're sitting there smoking a bong. And I look at them, and one of them was a defensive tackle. And I played defensive end, and we were lined up right next to each other. And I looked at him, and I said, okay, so tomorrow we're going to war at 1 o'clock, and this is what you're doing at 9 o'clock the night before.
Yeah.
And he was a junior, and I was a sophomore. I was an underclassman. And he looks at me, and he says, come on, man, just chill out. And I'm like, no, I ain't chilling out nothing. I'm like, we're going to war in less than 12 hours, and you're over here smoking a bong. I said, man, that is not right. So it's been going on a long time, but that doesn't make it okay. So to answer your question, 100% against it, Coach.
Well, football's an aggressive sport, and to me, I thought that marijuana made you passive and, you know, non-aggressive and apathetic to an extent. So, we're on the same page there, of course. And, it's just tragic how many players I've seen go by the wayside for violating that policy. So, next thing I would mention is the importance of self-esteem. And I really think that in my experience, much of that comes from playing time or not getting playing time. And then that not getting playing time sometimes resulted in anger and resentment along with possibly lower self-esteem. So what are your thoughts there?
Well, Coach, when you talk about anger, frustration, I want people to understand who hear this. Anger and frustration are secondary emotions. Okay. Primary emotions are hurt and fear. So if you're ever angry or frustrated, you are actually hurt first, meaning your feelings get hurt. But we pop so quickly to anger and frustration, we don't even feel the hurt. So what I would encourage people to understand is, like, if you're not getting PT, playing time, that hurts because, you came to college, you work hard, you think you're going to get some playing time, but you don't. That hurts. You need to stay in that emotion and feel it, okay, whether it's in your dorm room or your apartment. You don't want to be acting hurt during Oklahoma drill. I get that. But when you're at home, you've got to feel that pain. If you just go to anger and go, oh, man, I'll just use Coach Jake's name for example. Coach Jake should be playing me. I should be a starter. I should be. And blame it on other people or external factors. You're never going to process that hurt. If you process and say, you know what, at this point, I'm just not good enough to get on the field. But I'm going to keep working on my speed, my agility, my change of direction, my strength. And I'm going to get there. And that's a base you can work with and the brain can work with to build that, as you talk about, self-esteem.
Yeah.
There's a term we use in psychology. It's called self-efficacy. And self-efficacy is more stable than confidence. And so that's what we study. But self-efficacy is based on past experiences you've had successful. So I think it's so important to understand, don't pop to that secondary emotion of anger. So if you find yourself angry and frustrated, you've got to backtrack and get in touch with that hurt or fear base first. Get in touch with it, process it, own it. Don't blame other people. Don't blame your coach. Don't blame, we're running a 4-3 when we should be running a 3-4. Don't blame the scheme. Look at yourself in the mirror and say, how do I get better every day from the neck up and the neck down?
No doubt. Well, the next thing that I wanted to mention is just basic stress. And what I'm talking about is the daily schedule that has at the collegiate level, all the demands. And then with regard to academics, athletics, the tutor, then on top of that, you're trying to have a social life of some sort. What kind of advice or how can we make that better for athletes? I guess it's a time management process, for instance.
Yeah, it is. But there's a technique that we've heard a lot of the top coaches use throughout the nation in college and the NFL, and we see it in the NBA and Major League Baseball too. It's something I teach on a regular basis. And what it's called is process, focus on process goals instead of outcome goals.
Yeah.
And when you focus on process, coach, it's a lifestyle. It's not just a protocol or a practice. It's a lifestyle. Everything is process. And here's an example. When I was in high school, I played Mike linebacker. And nobody taught me to read keys. They didn't teach me really anything about how to get off blocks or anything. I just ran around and made plays because I had speed. But I also got ear-holed a lot because I didn't know where I was going.
Yeah.
I get to college, Coach Jake starts teaching me how to read. You know, imagine that. You read near guard, near back, and you start reading that. Because before I was looking in the backfield, I was looking at the ball, trying to find the ball to tackle the ball. Well, I get to college, Coach Jake teaches me how to read, and the read takes you to the ball. Don't look at the ball. You will meet the ball when you follow your process. That's my process. I was focused on outcome in high school, making the tackle. The process is footwork and technique that will get me to the outcome. And so people need to understand, let's go back to the science of the sympathetic and parasympathetic. You will stay in the parasympathetic if you focus on process. Here's why. I have 100% control over process. Footwork and technique, nobody can take that away from me. Now, you may lock me up and block me, but I can still use my footwork and technique. There's nobody taking that away from me. I get to own it.
Right.
If I focus on outcome, I better get the tackle. I better make the pick. We better win. I don't have 100% control over outcome goals. So think about this, coach. We are grading ourselves every day as players, as people, a salesperson who's selling homes, for example. I'm grading myself on an outcome basis. Did I make the tackle? Did I sell the house? Did I make the TD reception? When I don't have 100% control over that, that's silly. What I should be assessing myself on is process. And process are things we have 100% control over. Effort, energy, attitude, footwork, technique. I can control all those. That's what I assess myself on. Now, the outcome, of course I want to make the tackle. Of course I want to make the reception. Of course we want to win the game. But all we can really do is focus on process. And guess what? The wins are a symptom of process. So when I take care of process, symptom takes care of itself. I'll give you an example. I was at one of Alabama's practices, oh gosh, I don't know, 10 years ago. And offensive line coach was just teaching first step hand placement, first step hand placement. It wasn't like first step, second step, pop your hips. It wasn't the whole shebang. It was process. Yeah. And he did that for 10 minutes, first step. And the people were like, why is he spending so much time on first step? Well, I'm not an offensive lineman, but I played against a lot of offensive linemen. And I can tell you their first step is very important in the process of blocking you.
Right.
So when we learn to focus on process, and I don't mean just when I'm competing every day in my life, then anxiety goes down because I have 100% control over that. When I focus on outcome goals, anxiety goes up because I don't have 100% control over that. And that goes against the general sentiment in our society, coach. People are always taught outcome goals. Oh, yeah. I want to make all conference. I want to make 200 tackles this year. I want to, be on varsity, whatever it is. Well, just go out and focus on process, people, and then the outcome will come.
Kind of like one play at a time.
That's it. Yeah. 100%.
So the other thing, another one of these factors would be relationships. So developing relationships, getting through, let's say a young man comes to play football. He's got a relationship with a young lady back home and he's having a hard time. He's having anxiety. just because he misses her and is not used to being away from her. And I've seen that happen quite a bit. You know, how do we deal with that the best way?
Here's a simple answer that's going to sound complex. Focus on process. Okay. I just told you about what, you know, whether it's a tackle or a block. But the reason I said it's a lifestyle, Coach, is because it is. So even in relationships, you know, when this same young man you're talking about misses his girlfriend, that's an outcome. But if he focuses on process, you know what? Tonight I'm going to talk to her on the phone for 20 minutes, 30 minutes. And, you know, we're just going to talk about how we're doing. That's process. Yeah. Outcome is I miss you. We know we miss each other, but that's going to an outcome goal. Let's focus on our communication to each other. Let's focus on our interests in each other's lives. Let's focus on what we're doing. I'm doing here at college, what you're doing on back home, and talk about process things. Then the brain will go away from the outcome. See, there's two things here. There's a brain and there's a mind. The brain is the anatomy. The mind is the brain plus input. So if I just tell my brain, I'm going to focus on process today. When I talk to Betty Lou, it's going to talk about, you know, how her cat's doing, how her job's going. Here's how practice went today. I got a test in geometry tomorrow. It's all process. Then my brain stays away from, I miss her. I miss her. Now, don't get me wrong. At the end of the day, your mind will go, okay, yeah, I do miss her. But there won't be such a focal point. I'll give you a case in point. When I was a sophomore in college, I had a roommate that came all the way from the Bronx in New York. And every night, his girlfriend would call him. Every single night. So his brain is getting bombarded with her voice, her name, her experiences. No wonder he misses her, right? Yeah. So, but if he focus on process, hey, you know what? Let's talk twice a week. I got practice. I got to study. We'll talk twice a week and then talk about what she's doing on a daily basis, what I'm doing, and not so much about, oh, I miss you. Because then that's bringing the heartstrings into it. And the brain will believe what you tell it. If you tell your brain, I miss her, it'll miss her. But if you tell your brain, I miss her, but I'm focusing on being a better student, being a better athlete, the brain will go there as well.
Right. So backing up just a little bit, that I thought about something here, back to self-esteem. How do you feel like social media impacts self-esteem? And what are your thoughts there?
Boy, you opened up a can of worms here. I think social media is harming us, Coach, in general. I think that overall, I think there's some good things to it. Don't get me wrong. But adolescence, let's take adolescence. Adolescence is from 10 and a half to 24 and a half. The prefrontal cortex of the brain is not developed till 24 and a half. It is harming most of our adolescents in this society. Yeah. Because I'll give you an example. My youngest son is 14 years old, and I'm a pretty intuitive guy. And I noticed that when he was going to school that he just seemed off a little bit. Now, I have a general rule. I'm not saying this is for everybody, but this is my rule at home. My sons do not play video games. They can play derivatives of them. Like my 16-year-old son plays an architecture game where he builds homes. But there's a math part of that. But not video games like shooting up people or destroying people in any way. We don't even have an Xbox. I don't even know what the other one's called. There's Xbox and then Y80 or whatever the heck they're called. I don't know. We don't even have that in our home.
Right.
So when my 14-year-old, I noticed something was off with him. So I started digging. I talked to teachers, talked to the principal. I talked to him. And he looked me in the eye and he says, Dad, yeah, I've been playing video games on my computer in the back of the classroom. And so I said, okay, you know, that's a rule. You shouldn't be doing it. And he says, yeah, I know. He says, but all my friends play it. So I thought I would. And I said, well, okay, well, here's a lesson for you that we don't have to do what all your friends do. But long story short, I made sure that his teachers knew that he wasn't playing it in the back of the classroom. He was blocked on certain sites. His eyes brightened up within a day. I mean, just his eyes, his attention, his focus, you know, it was sucking the life out of him, Coach. You right. can see it. You can feel it. And these people that literally sit on their Xboxes or whatever they do and play for 2, 3, 4. And I even heard of 8 hours at a time. Yeah. I'm like, what do? You take a bathroom break, or what do you guys do? But I feel like social media, the Instagram, the TikTok, all it shows is beauty, strength, power. It doesn't show pain. It doesn't yeah. show vulnerability. It doesn't show us in our real world. You know, Coach, right. one of the things I admit to my clients right away, whether it's an NFL guy or it's an everyday person, I tell them I have challenges too in my life. I'm a real person. Just because I have those three letters behind my name doesn't mean I'm perfect. I am not. I have my own challenges. So when we all say we're in this together, we need to really be in this together and say to be vulnerable with each other, be willing to say, you know what, I'm working on that. But right now I have those challenges, and I do as a psychologist. So when we show Instagram and it's only beauty, when we show TikTok and it's only people who can dance with rhythm and you know, are beautiful, that's not the real world. And what that does, it causes harm, because people will look at that and go, man, I don't have a body like that. I don't look like that. I don't have 10 million likes. You know, and so they start internalizing that they don't measure up. And comparison is a slippery slope to low self-concept. Low self-concept is at the root of low self-esteem.
Old problem of alcohol. It's still around.
Yes.
So a couple thoughts there.
Yeah. Alcohol is one of the most destructive, pervasive, yet socially acceptable drugs that we participate in. I have seen alcohol tear apart teams, families, and organizations. We normalize alcohol in this culture in the United States. We normalize it. It's normal. Let's go out and have a drink. Let's go out to happy hour. You know, I heard something the other day was put beautifully. I'm not going to take credit for this, but someone said, be aware that when you sit at the dinner table, if your child has to reach over your glass of wine or reach over your beer to get their milk, to get their water. And that really resonated with me in my head, Coach, because I was thinking, man, how many families sit down with a glass of wine, with a beer? Now, I'm not saying that drinking a glass of wine is taboo and you shouldn't do it, okay? But what I'm saying is, think about the visualization of that 12-year-old adolescent, and they see mom with a glass of wine maybe every night or every other night, or they see dad come home and drink 2 or 3 beers after work on the lounge chair. It becomes normal. And again, I just think that alcohol, the abuse of alcohol, is just harming so many of us, and it's so it's sneaky. It's yeah. sneaky in a way where you can send a text and your text message even changed. I'll be real honest with you. I'm divorced, and I date, and I have a girlfriend that I date, and Coach. And I share this with her. I'm a very transparent guy. And I told her, I says, look, when you're out of town and you call me and you've had a glass of wine, I can tell. I can tell. She's not slurring her words or acting silly, but she's a little more expressive, just a little more expressive. I can tell in her text messages when she's had a glass of wine. And she's a little gal. She's, you know, 5'1", you know, 110 pounds. So it doesn't take a lot.
Yeah.
But I personally, I don't want to talk to wine. I want to talk to the person. You know, yeah. I don't want to talk to 5 beers. I want to talk to the person. And I've literally had to take, you know, some of my college teammates, I've literally said, hey, bro, you know, get some sleep. We'll talk tomorrow. You know, because I don't want to talk to those 5 beers. That's not accurate perception. So, yeah, alcohol, is just as destructive as any other drug out there on the market. It's just, and the crazy thing is it's right in front of us. We normalize it and it's legal.
Well, there's so much emphasis now with athletes on restoration and recovery and taking care of your body and nutrition. And it's all gone in the right direction, in my opinion. You know, I just went up to Ohio State's strength clinic this past week and sat down with their performance integration team. And it was very eye-opening to me on how much resources, effort, staff members, and so forth, that's basically being dedicated toward, I guess you could say, wellness, recovery. I mean, you're talking about float tanks. You know, every athlete has an Oura Ring. You know, using force plates to provide information, just all kinds of different feedback modalities. And of course, when I coached, I used what we call Tendo units for velocity based training to give you some feedback on every rep in relationship to wattage or speed produced in that particular repetition. But feedback, recovery, you know, all these things are really being emphasized at a high level, and a lot of money is being spent on research. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, this new dry float tank is about 25 grand just for one unit. So, you know, hopefully that those things work well.
Yeah.
But so with regard to that, and I just remembered also, you know, I came out and visited the Broncos when Al Miller was there. So were you, do you know Al Miller?
Al Miller.
Strength coach.
No.
Okay. So no. I'm not sure what year that was, but I have been to Denver. So I went up to a park up in the mountains somewhere. I drove up there. It was beautiful. But during that time, you know, Al was probably the most, I guess you could say, respected authority in strength and conditioning across the country that kind of everybody went to. And he took a lot of things from the Eastern Bloc countries. But I did want you to know that I had been out there. I think they just made a change in their strength coach this past week with the new regime coming in, from what I read.
Yep, they sure did.
And that happens quite frequently.
Yeah, sure does. As you know, the NFL stands for not for long.
Yeah, no doubt. So, you know, with regard to all these things that I mentioned, for instance, that I saw at Ohio State, are you using some of these, or what are your feelings about what is the most impactful now in relationship to restoration?
Yeah, to answer your question, absolutely yes. We've had the float tank, the scientific term is called a sensory deprivation tank. We've had one for about 9 years now. In fact, I should have bought stock in that company, because when I worked for the Broncos, before I worked for the Broncos, they didn't have any. Now they got four. Before I worked for the Dolphins, they had none. Now they got three. Cleveland, I can go on and on.
Right.
But yeah, those, we're very much cutting edge, coach. I want to be a practitioner that helps reach people where they're at, not where I'm at. Okay. You know, I'm not going to ask someone to dive into my PhD level education. No, I got to reach them where they're at. So if it's a 9-year-old gymnast, if it's a 27-year-old linebacker, I got to be able to reach those guys where they're at. And sometimes it is a float tank. Sometimes it's a biomat with the amethyst crystals that relaxes the central nervous system, breaks down lactic acid. Sometimes it's the alpha stim, the one that clips on the ears and sends an electrical current through the upper cortical structure of the brain and stimulates the alpha brain waves, which regulates anxiety, depression, and insomnia. Sometimes it's neurofeedback, what we do here, where we train people's brains through computer programs. And I want people to know something about neurofeedback, by the way. It's the single greatest thing to happen in human behavior in a century. Okay, and I'll repeat that. It's the single best thing to happen in human behavior in a century, because it treats the brain at an electronic level that I can't do, you can't do, a therapist can't do. So we now have methodologies that are going beyond just our communicative abilities. It's our ability to use technology, the electronics to stimulate brain. We now know the brain has neuroplasticity, which means the brain can change. That's called neurogenesis. And then the brain will prune away what we no longer use. That's called neuropruning. So we now have the ability, Coach, to reconstruct or reframe the way people think in a yeah. systematic way. So it's just so powerful. And then we have the recovery tools for the body. I mean, I want to be a guy here at Think One that leaves no stone unturned. I don't want to, you know, and Coach Jake has been a great influence on me there. He keeps asking me about different, hey, what about this? What about this? And I love that because I want to be on the front edge. I want to be on the cutting edge because my sons, 19, 16, and 14, are playing football in this day and age. And recovery is a big, big part of it. Bodies are only getting bigger and stronger and faster, even though the rules have changed quite a bit since we played. But there's still a lot of collisions on the football field, and we have to help these athletes recover, not just from the neck down, but from the neck up. And we have those tools now, Coach.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've always been interested in the neural aspect of things. And when it came along with homogenic gel electrophoresis that, I guess, replaced histochemistry and looking at fiber types and did single fiber typing, they found that there were a lot more hybrid types. And, I thought that was good news because now the plasticity factor comes in relationship to the training effect.
Yes, yes.
So now we can say, okay, this guy isn't coming in the door with a 40-inch vert, but maybe with 2 years of hard work, I can make him better. Maybe we can improve his twitch.
Yeah.
And hopefully the force plates will tell us more about that over the years in relationship to how far we can develop people.
Yeah.
But all that stuff really interests me, and particularly the rate coding aspect of, I guess you could say, neural adaptation. Which seems to be kind of pliable. Like if you don't continue to train explosively, it's going to go away. So I don't know how much you've studied that, but those things are very interesting to me with regard to the nervous system.
Yeah, and it's applicable to the brain too. That's the thing that we're talking about with the neuroplasticity and the neurogenesis. To think yeah. that we can create new neural pathways. I mean, think about that. We wow. can create new neural pathways. It's like going up a hiking trail and then going up to that fork and turning right where all the weeds and the trees are, and you just do it over and over and over, and pretty soon you got a new pathway. So right. And then the old pathway will grow in. We don't use it anymore. So we literally can shape our thoughts, because here's the quote, shape your thoughts or else your thoughts will shape you. And unfortunately, most people are rocking around in our society letting their thoughts shape them instead of them taking control and shaping their thoughts. So yeah, you're 100% right, Coach. From the neck down, from the neck up, we are learning through research and development that we have more of a hand in an athlete's development, a person's development, physiologically, psychologically, and emotionally. And when you have more control over that, then anxiety in and of itself will go down. Because I can tell you this, just from my experience in the NFL, 32 teams in the NFL, I'd say there's about 26 teams that don't know what they're doing from the neck up still. And that's sad. I mean, that's going to sound harsh, but it's true. And right. until we look in the mirror and say, how do we catch up to what we've done from the neck down, then we're not going to be honest with ourselves. I mean, the NFL is now instituting these new wellness programs, which is good. I love right. it. But better understand that autonomic nervous system, that sympathetic and parasympathetic, because if you don't, you're not yeah. going to understand how to keep yourself in that parasympathetic.
Well, Dr. Priya, we got about 7 or 8 minutes, so I wanted you to hit maybe two things here. And the first one is sleep. And then the second one would be these people that are being hired in the NFL now as player development. That's their title. A little bit about, you know, what are they trying to do? Is it to maybe I heard about possibly alleviating anxiety after you leave the NFL and finding out how to maybe find, you know, your way through your next 25, 30 years of life and not lose all your money. And, you know, things of that nature that, of course, could affect your mental state. But tell us a little bit about sleep.
So sleep is vital for recovery, as most people understand. That's when the neurons repair themselves, the muscles repair themselves. So, but there's still a lot of research on what's required for each individual. Some people will say 7 to 8 hours. But I personally, I eat well. I drink a lot of water. I'm a very healthy person. I only need about 4 or 4.5 hours of sleep every night. Now, again, I'm not 27 years old either, but yeah. The point is, sleep is where we grow, where we recover, where we really make our gains. And I want people to understand consistent sleep is important. Now, again, we have this device called the alpha stim. The alpha stim stimulates, it regulates anxiety, depression, and insomnia. So when you can improve your sleep exponentially, you're going to help your recovery. Let me give you an example. When I was working for the Miami Dolphins, our executive vice president was a guy named Mike Tannenbaum. You probably see him on ESPN right now. He's always is on ESPN leading up to the draft, and he's no longer an EVP of an NFL team, so he's doing a lot of commentary. And you know, I was talking to Mike, and he says, "You know, I haven't slept a full night in 20 years," and he used that alpha stim one time. And he overslept a 7 a.m. meeting the next day. So I'm not saying it's going to work that way for everybody, but there are ways that we can improve our sleep. I think so many people say, well, I don't know. I just got to throw my hands up. I've tried everything. I've tried listening to meditation music. I've tried melatonin. I've tried all these different methodologies. But there's electronic ways that we can stimulate improved sleep as well. But just remember, it's about growth. And restoration of tissue, of neurons, and muscle fibers.
Right. Okay. So a little bit about what do you think the future is in relationship to the things that need to be emphasized, and what are the objectives with these player development people, with these NFL athletes?
Yeah. You know, I can speak to about 4 or 5 teams that I've been exposed to. And in every instance, it's been a good situation. Player development is a lot about what the players do off the field. How do they continue to develop? You know, I know the Denver Broncos have a program where they get their guys to finish their degrees. There's a lot of people don't understand. A lot of these guys, you know, don't even go to school their spring semester, their senior year, because they're preparing for the combine and getting drafted. So a lot of them don't have their degrees. And then you look at some of them signing multi-million dollar contracts, and they'll say, well, I don't need my degree. I got millions of dollars. No, you need your degree so you can use logic and common sense, and you can apply critical thinking skills in your life throughout the rest of your life. Because the average NFL career is 2.9, 3.2 years. It's over in a heartbeat. You've got to have the tools to go beyond that. So they work on things like finishing your education, but they also talk about furthering your education, going to graduate school. The Miami Dolphins have a great program through their owner, Stephen Ross, who's a business tycoon up in New York. And they have a workshop every year where the players go and they meet business leaders and they talk to them about how they became entrepreneurs. And so they're always thinking about the players once they step off the field too. And so it's player development is really looking out for the player's welfare beyond the field, off the field, and then beyond their career. And I've seen some really good programs that really help. Now, here's the challenge. A few player development people act or think they are psychologists, but they're not. And what we need to understand in the NFL and college football and high school too is you have psychologists, but you also have wellness coordinators. Those are two different things. And the NFL will get it figured out. They don't quite have it figured out yet, but they will. They got to keep pathology separate from wellness, because pathology is, you know, people who are having challenges, real specific issues. That's different than the wellness. And once we understand to separate those two, as well as from the player development piece, but player development works really hand in hand with the mental health people in any organization at the NFL level or college level.
Interesting. Very good point. Well, I guess my advice to the listeners would be to read about the Alpha Stem, go find a float tank, find somebody to love, and treat people right the way that you'd want to be treated. And so happy to have you on. I really appreciate it very much. Tell us what your podcast is and when it comes on.
My podcast is called Brain Foreplay. Here's the brain. Yep. Brain Foreplay. And it's we do it once a week, and it's meant to just stimulate thought, thinking about why we do what we do. And it's not just athletes. It's organizational performance. It's people performance every day. I think people forget that we perform in our roles every day, our job, our career, mom and dad. Those are all roles that we perform in. And our podcast, you know, I have on guests sometimes where we just talk about the brain and the brain development. But sometimes we just talk about classism, racism, things, modern topics that really influence our modern day culture. Saturday, I'm going to be speaking at an event talking about the difference between racism and ethnocentrism on athletic teams, because some people mix up those words and they don't quite understand what they are. So we're no topic is off limits. And we just try to help people, Coach, like we talked before. Helper and healer, if that's what we spend our life doing, then we're in a good spot.
Awesome. Well, I'll be a subscriber. And so thank you so much for being on, Dr. Rick Perea. And hopefully we can do it again sometime. But thank you for listening, and God bless. And we'll see you next week. Thanks a lot, Doc.
Thanks, Coach.
You've been listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join us every Monday night for a new edition of the show. Listen to the show pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. Be sure to follow us on social media at TheSportsOBJ on Twitter and TikTok, at The Sports Objective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. As always, we appreciate you listening to the show, and go Pirates!